Thank you, Zev. I'm actually a bit nervous because I'm trying to plan my talk this week because I leave things till the last minute. And I couldn't really get an image of the crowd, right? So normally I help people who live in Japan kind of get started with personal finance, right? But the real estate crowd, you know, you guys are a bit scarier, right? You've already got it together. So I thought, can't do my normal talk. So I was thinking, okay, what could be useful? And one thing that could be useful, I think, is maybe just telling you about a few kind of quirks about the tax system in Japan. Things that I found surprising, things that people I talk to find surprising, infuriating, nonsensical in some cases. So, and the main thing here, I think, is that I'm not a tax professional, so I can't help you with your tax return. I can't even give you tax advice. I'm not allowed to. Japan's quite strict about who is allowed to do certain things. If you're not an accountant, a zeirishi, or a tax lawyer, you can't give individual tax advice. If you're not a lawyer, you can't give individual legal advice. But I'm not going to do that today. Instead, what I'd like to do is just tell you about a few things. And my hope is that having heard them, you know, you might think, oh, that might apply to me, and you can go ahead and go and do some more research, maybe get some professional advice and so on. But you're not going to get caught out, because that's what happens. People aren't aware of these things until they land on them. Right? So we're going to go through that a little bit. So first of all, just to give you a quick introduction, like Ziv's kind introduction pretty much covered it. But so my name is Ben. I'm currently transitioning into Ben Tanaka. I've used Ben Sheeran most of my life. My passport name is Ben Sheeran Johnson. And I don't like having a double-barreled name so much. But I'm currently applying to become a Japanese citizen. So I'm going through a naturalization process. Started that last year. It looks like it's going to take another year or two. The government keeps changing the rules, but I'm fairly confident. I'm enjoying the process as well. So if you want to talk about that later on, that'd be great. I'm happy to chat about that. I was actually born in Germany. Unfortunately, Germany doesn't give citizenship to people who are born there. So I couldn't get a German passport. And so when the UK left the EU, I lost my EU passport as well. Very disappointing. I grew up in Spain, so I really do feel like I'm European, which is strange considering that I'm now becoming Japanese. But so I came to Japan in 2000, straight out of university. So I've never worked anywhere else. I've never been an adult, really, anywhere else. Japan is all I know. And not just Japan, but Sendai. So when I came to Japan, I was sent to Sendai. Never heard of Sendai. Had to look it up in an atlas because we didn't really have the internet back then. But it really worked out well for me. So personally, I think Sendai is the best place to live in Japan. Like, Fukuoka's close. Fukuoka is a really close second, but the climate down there is just brutal. So I've been living and working in Japan since 2000. I was an English teacher for 22 years. And I kind of semi-retired in 2022, which gave me a bit more time to spend on Retire Japan, which is my kind of passion project. So the reason I started Retire Japan, the reason I got into finance is in 2008, so until 2008, I wouldn't really think about money. I think most people do go through life this way, right? You earn money, you spend money, you don't really think about it too much. You're not aware of the possibilities. Unless you grew up in that kind of family. You know, some families, you know, they've got their money stuff really sorted out. They teach the kids about it. It's great. If you're not from that kind of family, there's not really a good way to learn I find. And you really need some kind of trigger point. So for me, I talk about personal finance all the time. Most people are not interested. The only way to talk to people about this is if they want to know it, right? And you want to know it because something happened, right? Maybe you got married, maybe you had a child, or like me, maybe you lost your job. Something stressful, something important happens, and you start thinking about money. Maybe you turned 30 or 40 or something, right? And you thought, all right, now it's time to get serious about money. For me, it was losing my job. So 2008, I was on a one-year rolling contract. This might sound familiar. When I started the job, they said, oh, you can stay as long as you like, forever. And 4 years later, the situation changed. And my boss called me in for a meeting in November one day, out of the blue, and said, oh, we're not going to renew your contract in March. So I had 3 kids, 2 cats. We were renting this big house. And Sendai's not a great place to find a new job at short notice. So that was incredibly stressful. But the thing I took away from it was, it's my fault that I'm in this situation, right? I didn't prepare for this. And I'm not going to let that happen again. And that started me thinking about money, learning about money. And then from 2013, I started trying to help other people learn about money. So it's like, okay, I've benefited from this knowledge, but there's lots of people in Japan, especially English speakers, people who are more comfortable in English than in Japanese, that could really do with some of this information as well. So I started Retire Japan as a blog, and it kind of grew from there. So now we've got the forum. Might have, yeah, here we go. So we've got a forum, we've got a YouTube channel, we've got publications, I do coaching kind of on the side, and there's a lot of information on here. So this is retirejapan.com, just go there. There's all sorts of information, contact details and so on. But today I wanted to talk about taxes. So I want to talk about some things that I found surprising that some people might know about. And my hope is that I'll just make you aware of them. And so if you need to, you can get professional advice, you can talk to an accountant, you can talk to the tax office. Tax office in Japan is quite good, I find, at least for personal matters. They're not as friendly to companies, but for individuals, they're fairly friendly, I think. And I think we'll have some time for questions at the end. And I'm also planning to have a breakout corridor later on as well. So if you come and join me in the corridor, we can have a chat as well. So for me, Japan is a really easy place to invest. It's a really user-friendly place to invest. As long as you're a resident, it's very easy to open accounts and use the tax-free accounts here, and just really invest in a very time-efficient way. Once it's all set up, there's very little that you have to do to keep it going. So the main one's NISA, obviously. The NISA account got revamped in 2024. So it used to be you could invest 1.2 million yen a year for like 5 years. But in 2024, they expanded that to 3.6 million yen a year, up to 18 million yen lifetime contribution. For most people, if you fill your NISA account with something sensible, like a low-cost index fund, and just leave it, that's your retirement. Sort it. So the one-stop solution. And doing that might take you a couple of weeks to set up, and then it'll take you a few hours a year to maintain. So that's amazing. Iveco is the other one. This is the kind of pension version. So Iveco, you pay in to Iveco, you pay in pre-tax income. It reduces your income taxes. It's locked away until you're 60. You can't spend it. You can't have your midlife crisis and like buy a sports car with your Iveco balance. And then from 60, you can access this. There's a tax break on the way out as well. So you get taxed very little on the way out. And they're putting up the limits next year. So from January 2027 salaried employees currently paying 23,000 yen a year, a month rather, you'll be able to put in 62,000 yen a month, which is huge, really expands it a lot. Very excited about iDeCo. And even just investing normally. So in Japan, we have this thing called the Tokute Koza, which is a tax deducting account. So if you have a broker and you put your investments in this Tokute Koza, the broker does your taxes for you. That's how user-friendly it is. You don't have to do a tax return. You don't have to calculate your taxes. The broker will deduct any taxes owed, capital gains or dividends, from your balance and will pay them on your behalf. So Japan, incredibly user-friendly for kind of stock market type investors. Now, the less user-friendly parts. So investing's great. Actually, this is good too. So my experience with Japanese tax offices is very friendly, very professional, very helpful. So in Japan, at least in my experience, the tax office is not adversarial, right? In some countries, the tax office is there to catch you. It's there to punish you. In Japan, the tax office is there to help you file your taxes correctly. That's their goal. And they will work with you to help you file. So the Zemusho, you'll have one locally that you can go to. And the thing is, you can drop in and just talk to them. And they'll help you, they'll give you advice. In the tax filing season, which is between February and March each year, the date's slightly different depending on when the weekends are and stuff, but you have about a month to file your tax return for the calendar year. So the tax returns go from January to December, and you file the following February. But you can go to the tax office and they'll do it for you. So you walk in. Recently, you have to make an appointment post-COVID. They put in all these appointment systems, which makes the waits a little bit easier. But you can go to the tax office with all your paperwork and find some poor person who will be cowering and just drop it on them. And they will sit down with you with a computer and they'll basically do your tax return with you. And the benefit of that is that having done it once, the following year, you can do it online. And it's the same procedure. So as long as you took notes or maybe took some, you know, photos of the screenshots, you can do your own taxes the next year. And the e-tax system that they brought in, well, recently, from my point of view, it's been around for a couple of years now, very, very easy to use. The interface is a Japanese interface, but it's fairly user-friendly. And there is an English language guide put out by the National Tax Authority. So it's pretty good. If you have a complicated situation, if you've got a company, you know, if you've got multiple streams of income, you probably want to get an accountant. But as an individual person with a relatively simple situation, it's very easy to file online, and the tax office will help you to do so. I forgot to file my taxes once. So there's a thing where if you're a salaried employee and you have less than 200,000 yen of side work, you don't have to file that in your tax return, but you do have to file it locally. And I didn't know about that until I got this letter saying, please come in to the tax office to talk to us about this. And I was really worried about this. I thought, wow, I'm in trouble. I'm going to have to pay a fine. It's going to be stressful. I went in and this really nice man, we sat down and he started asking me what kind of, you know, expenses I might have incurred while earning this part-time income, right? I went in to pay the tax and possibly pay a fine. He sat down and said, well, let's file this for you. And you must have had some transport expenses, right? Right? I was like, okay, maybe. And he's like, okay, let's put down 20,000 yen. And then he's like, you must have, like, printing costs. Let's put that down as well. So by the end of it, he had reduced the tax I owed by about a third, because that would be like a normal thing. And it really wasn't what I was expecting. But that's what I think the tax office is like if you work with them, right? So that. Once they catch you, they're not very nice at all. Like, my wife's been audited a couple of times, and she hadn't done anything wrong. But apparently, if you move tax offices as a sole proprietor, that makes it quite likely that you'll get audited. And the audit people are not nice. They're not like the other tax people. They're more like the tax police. So that's a bit less fun. Now, one slightly thing that you need to be careful about is that it's quite possible that the tax office will give you bad advice, right? Especially if it's something obscure, especially if it's something overseas. They're not necessarily going to be 100% aware of what the rules are. And so getting bad advice is not going to help you later if you get pulled up on that. So it's quite common in Japan. So you can go in. Immigration's awful about this. So you talk to immigration and three different people give you three different answers. But later on, if you're like, no, but they told me this, doesn't help you. It's not an excuse. They're like, okay, sorry, but you're still in trouble. So just, yeah, especially if it's something complicated, be sure to get like a second opinion as well. And then this is huge. So you've probably seen the news recently where, you know, the government is reacting to people being angry about tourists by making things harder for residents. And this is a huge part of it now. So not just tax, but health insurance, pension, all your payments have to be not just current, but you have to prove that they were made on time as well. So currently, if you go for permanent residence at the moment, for example, you have to have the receipts that you paid your health insurance payments with or your pension payments with in order to prove that the payments were made on time, because the agencies that run these things can't issue proof of that. So it's getting really nitpicky about... Right. So, yeah, so tax, it's not just a tax thing. So there are not just tax penalties, there are immigration penalties for tax problems. So really important to be completely up to date. Right, tax residence. So this is quite nice. If you're not Japanese, the first 5 years you spend in Japan, you don't have to pay tax on overseas income. So you're probably aware of this. This is a really nice system. Just be careful with what overseas income is. So if you're working in Japan and being paid in a different country, that's Japan income, right? Because you are in Japan. So what they're talking about here is things like rental income, which would be good for this crowd, I guess. Rental income, you know, maybe capital gains, dividends, interest in foreign countries. First 5 years you're in Japan, you don't have to declare that here. Right, unless you bring it to Japan. Bringing it to Japan makes it taxable. So the best way to approach this is to make sure that you don't need to bring money to Japan for those first 5 years, and then you don't have to pay tax on that income. There's a lot of information about this online. Please do have a look if you're in that kind of happy first 5 years here. And the terminology is confusing, so just be careful with the terminology. At least in English. So in English, they say you are permanently resident for tax purposes. That's from the 6 year onwards. Or you are not permanently resident for tax purposes. And this has nothing to do with your visa, right? So it doesn't matter if you're a permanent resident or not. You can be a permanent resident status and be non-permanently resident for tax purposes, right? So the visa and the tax status, completely different, even though they use the same words to describe them, which is really confusing. Health insurance. So health insurance is compulsory. And again, because of all this visa crackdown stuff, you need to enroll immediately. So as soon as you become resident, that same week, you need to enroll in health insurance, pretty much. You can get health insurance through your employer, if you're employed. That's Shakai Hoken. Or you can get it through City Hall. And the City Hall version is more expensive, unfortunately. So if you're employed, your employer pays half of your health insurance contributions. There's a few things that it's based on your previous year's income. So that first year in Japan, it's going to be very cheap, and then it's going to ratchet up later, probably. So just be aware that's going to happen. Surprisingly, it does cover you if you're overseas in some cases. So if you're overseas, you can sometimes get covered by your Japanese health insurance. But they will only pay as much as it would cost in Japan. So that means, you know, Southeast Asia, it might cover your costs. North America, probably not. And this is just my experience. I've had quite a lot of experience with medical stuff recently. Japan, I think, is great in that you can choose your doctor, you can choose your clinic, you can walk into pretty much any clinic same day and be seen. But the quality is really all over the place, right? So there are some excellent doctors out there, there are some awful doctors out there. And so, especially if you're going to be seeing a doctor regularly, it's really worth putting some time in and just going to lots of different clinics until you find one that's good, that works with you, that has a convenient kind of reservation system, and so on. I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I started when I was 40, which was a very bad idea. So I spend a lot of time in the Seikei Geka, which is the kind of, I don't know what it is in English, it's kind of like injuries, you know, kind of butt muscle and bone type stuff. And Seikei Geka tend to be full of elderly Japanese people that kind of hang out there. It's the, like their club. And so a normal Seikei Geka would take you 2-3 hours to get seen, right? But after, I think about 15, I tried about 15 in Sendai, and I found one that had a reservation system that works, a doctor that was very matter-of-fact and fast, and that's now my go-to clinic. But if I'd stuck with the first one, I'd still be having those, you know, 3-4 hour waits every time I had to go there. So definitely shop around for your regular doctors. Right, Nenkin is a Japanese pension. This is also compulsory. So, and again, immigration is very interested in whether you're paying your compulsory pension payments. You have to pay between 18 and 60. But if you're a student in full-time education, you can get an exemption. If you have low income, you can get reduced payments or an exemption as well. Even if you have very low income on paper, that is also possible. So there's lots of people who retire early and then get their pension waived through low income because they don't have a salary anymore. They're living off investments and savings and so on. There's different types of pension. So again, there's the company version, which is Kosei Nenkin. And then there's the basic version, which is Kokumin Nenkin, so the citizen's pension. This is a fixed rate. It's only 16,000 yen a month, but you do have to pay it. It is tax deductible as well. It takes 120 months to vest. So unless you've paid in 120 months, you will not get a pension from Japan. If you leave Japan before paying 120 months, you can get a partial refund up to 5 years' worth. If you leave Japan after paying 120 months, you can no longer get a refund. Instead, you'll get a very small pension from retirement age. 480 months, or 40 years is a full kind of pension, fully vested. And it's very small. Right, Japanese pensions, not generous in the slightest. You're unlikely to be able to have a satisfactory life with just a Japanese pension. That's why the government made these kind of investment accounts, right? The NISA account, the Iveco account. You want to be filling those, and that's going to pay for your pension, right? Your Nenkin is going to cover utilities, maybe your rent, maybe, but nothing else. Basically, right? There's all sorts of TV programs about pensioners living on, you know, very little and, you know, horrible situation. So don't put yourself in that horrible situation. Make sure you can take care of yourself, and then the Nenkin is just a little bonus on top. Yeah, so it's basically, especially now, this is going to factor into immigration stuff too. This is an unpleasant surprise for many people. So, kaigo hoken. This, I think it's not a bad system. So, this is basically nursing care insurance. So, from the age of 40, you have to pay this. So, most people find out just after their 40th birthday when their salary is much lower. They're like, what? What happened? Kaigo hoken started. That's what happened. So, from the age of 40 until you die, you have to pay kaigo hoken. It's a surcharge on top of health insurance, basically. It pays for subsidized nursing care. So, in old age, if you need help, this will help pay for that. So, my father-in-law, who's 94, goes to daycare like four times a week. Goes to daycare, they kind of feed him, they give him a bath, and he does some exercise and stuff. And that's subsidized by this. If you need it, you have to apply for it. It's not automatic. And you have to go through a... It's kind of weird. It's this kind of public-private partnership. So you apply through a private company that helps you apply for the public funding to subsidize your treatment or your care and so on. They can also pay to help you make your home more kind of retiree friendly as well. Make it barrier free and that kind of thing. So, but just be aware, from age 40, this will kick in and you have to start paying it as well. Right, this is a weird one that catches a lot of people out. So Japan, in principle, does, yeah, 5 minutes. Okay.
If you want time for Q&A, then 5 minutes.
No. Okay, I'm going to speed up a lot. All right, Japan does not have joint ownership. That's why they don't have joint checking accounts and so on. Everyone has to own something, right? If you want to own your house together, you have to put in the money separately, and then you have joint ownership and so on. This is important because Japan also has gift tax, and weirdly, for many people, it has gift tax between spouses. So if you buy your spouse a luxury car, they have to pay gift tax on that. If you give your spouse money to invest, they have to pay gift tax on that. Difficult for many people, especially for people who have a kind of communal view of marriage. This is very tough. Basically, these are gift tax rates. You do not want to pay gift tax. It's much more expensive than inheritance tax, for example. The reason it exists is to prevent people getting around inheritance tax, basically. One important exemption, so money for kind of normal living expenses does not count towards this. So, you know, if you're working and you give your spouse money to pay the rent or buy groceries and so on, it doesn't count. Money for investing definitely counts. Money for assets definitely counts. Yeah, just be careful. There is a 1.1 million allowance that you can receive every year before gift tax kicks in. If you want to give money to your kids, if you want to give money to your spouse for them to like invest or something, keep it under that amount and they won't have to do a gift tax return. Inheritance tax. Any Australians? Australians really don't like inheritance tax, do they? I'm from the UK. UK inheritance tax is probably a bit worse than Japan, so I don't mind inheritance tax here. I think it's reasonable. Okay, so you get 30, 40 million tax-free, and then it starts after that. First 10 million is taxed at 10% and so on. Spouse gets 160 million tax-free or half of the estate, whichever's larger. Seems reasonable. But inheritance tax is a thing. And if you're on a spouse visa or you're permanent resident in Japan, you have to pay inheritance tax on foreign inheritances. And this can be a big deal. Also, if you've been here for more than 10 years. But under 10 years on a work visa, you don't have to pay inheritance tax on overseas inheritances. So if you're expecting an inheritance, it's probably not a good idea to get permanent residence, right? Because you could be exposing yourself to this. Everyone talks about the top rate, which is 55%. But that's on more than 600 million yen, $4 million or so. Most people are not inheriting $4 million. If you are going to inherit $4 million, please get professional help, because you can afford it. Now, this I don't like. So I like inheritance tax. I like the concept of inheritance tax. In Japan, you inherit the original purchase price, which is a nightmare if you inherit overseas real estate. Okay, so let's say your grandmother in California dies, right? You inherit her house that she bought in 1970 for $3. You pay inheritance tax on the current market value, and then you sell it and you pay capital gains tax based on the original purchase price. So if at all possible, do not inherit real estate. Please try and inherit cash, and then, you know, your other family members that live abroad, they can get the real estate, and then you avoid this issue. Foreign exchange. Many people are unaware of this, but foreign exchange gains are taxable in Japan. So if you're playing with, you know, I'm going to buy dollars now, and then I'm going to buy yen later, that's taxable. You have to declare it. I think lots of people don't, but you should. Cryptocurrency is currently taxed in the same way as Forex, as in it's taxed as miscellaneous income. So you pay your marginal income tax rate on that. But this is probably going to change soon. So crypto is going to be likely taxed as capital gains instead, which for most people is better, right? You don't want to be paying 55% on your crypto because you made a lot of money. You can pay a flat 20% instead. But that hasn't started yet. It's going to come in quite soon, I think. Credit cards in Japan. It's really hard to get a credit card. So the first credit card is really hard to get. Once you have a credit card, it's easier to get more, right? Japan doesn't have a credit score. You have a credit record instead. Until you have a credit record, you can't get a credit card. So it's kind of chicken and egg kind of thing. It's quite hard to get chargebacks in Japan, I find. So you don't have the same protection that you might have in other countries where you can just be like, nope, I don't want to pay that. They're much stricter. But this is what I really like. You're expected to pay the full balance every month, right? Unless you specifically try and get it in installments, which I think is better. Furusato Nozei. Who's heard of Furusato Nozei? Who's doing Furusato Nozei? Okay. This is great. This is basically free stuff. People say this is a way to save tax. It's not a way to save tax, but it's a way to get free stuff. So I don't think there's any downside other than perhaps a moral kind of thing. The way it works is you go shopping with your local inheritance tax, basically. So you give your local inheritance tax to a different location, and then they send you a present, and the place where you live doesn't get the tax. So some people think that's problematic. Some people think it's a good way of moving money from cities to the countryside. From a personal point of view, you can get free stuff using this. But be careful, because the way it works is you make the donation and then later you get the tax returned to you. If you donate too much, you're not going to get that back. And the gifts are only worth about 15-20% of the donation amount. So if you go shopping properly, you're going to lose a lot of money with this. Charitable and political donations use the same tax allowance as Furusato Nozei. If you're non-Japanese, you can't do political donations. But the charity ones, yes. So you're using, just be sure that together they're not more than the amount of tax you have. Residence tax is based on your previous year's income. So again, be careful with this. There's one cheat code for this, which is if you leave before the end of December, you don't have to pay the following year's inheritance tax. If you leave in January, you do. So just a couple of days difference could be a huge tax bill, or not.
So, sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, so if you leave Japan and you leave in December, you don't have to pay the following year's local inheritance tax. If you leave in January, you do. So huge, huge difference just by leaving a couple of days before.
Is that leave permanent or just leave for a holiday?
Leave Japan permanent, yeah, yeah.
If you leave in August?
If you leave in... Yeah, so
Folks, we'll do the Q&A in a few minutes so that the streamers can hear it too. We'll pass the mic between you, so just give it a minute.
Excellent. Okay, this catches some people. You have to declare any foreign assets that are worth... Oh, where did that come from? right, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so you have to declare foreign assets worth 50 million yen or more. This is anything. So it's cash, investments, property, cars, jewelry. Together adds up to more than 50 million yen. You have to declare this. They haven't raised the amount with the weak yen and so on. So pretty much everyone is affected by this now. It's quite strict. So you have to declare. There are penalties. And it's not obvious because it doesn't come up anywhere in the tax reporting process. You have to know about this and actually go and do it. But yeah, if you have more than 50 million yen's worth of stuff overseas, after you're permanently tax resident, you have to do this declaration. The exit tax, this is the kind of boogeyman, right? So this only applies to people on spouse or PR, right? So working visas don't have to worry about the exit tax. It only kicks in if you have 100 million yen's worth of stocks or similar things. Real estate doesn't count, cash doesn't count. 100 million yen's worth of things that have capital gains. And when you leave, you have to pay capital gains tax as if you'd sold them, right? Easy way to get around this is just make sure you have slightly less than 100 million yen, and then you don't have to worry, right? Unless you have much more, in which case, get professional advice because you can afford it. Okay, owning a home, I don't think I need to talk about this with you guys. So there's a mortgage tax break, which is nice. And if you want to rent out your house that has a residential mortgage, you need permission from the bank. Loopholes. Japan doesn't have loopholes. Japan wants you to pay the taxes that are on the code. You know, there's not really ways to avoid that. There's a few things. So you can give money to a child or a grandchild to buy a home. Lump sum. You can give money for a child or grandchild to have education, especially grandparents. This is quite good. You give like 15 million yen and it's used for education. You can give money to your spouse to buy a house or to kind of own your house after 20 years of marriage. Yeah, be super careful with trusts overseas because Japan ignores them. So you could end up in this situation where you don't have access to the money, but Japan is taxing you as if you did. So just be really careful with trusts. And if your family is going to make a trust for you, make sure that you're not going to have huge problems with that. And my last piece of advice, if you're going to leave Japan for a considerable amount of time, get a re-entry permit. So this is the old system where you go to the immigration office, you get a re-entry permit that's valid for 5 years. And then if you happen to be outside Japan for more than 1 year, which is what the special re-entry permit gives you, you still get to keep your visa. I was talking to a client the other day. They were outside of Japan dealing with some family stuff and they weren't able to come back within a year. So they now no longer have a spouse visa. So, yeah, if you're going to Thailand for 10 days, not a problem. But if you're going back somewhere for like 8 months or something, get a re-entry permit just to be safe. Because, you know, we've got another COVID thing, you're locked out, goodbye visa. And good luck getting a new visa in this kind of environment, right? Okay, this is a really good place to ask questions as well. It's on Reddit, Japan Finance on Reddit. And then Q&A before Ziv kills me.
Yeah, we're going to have not that much time for Q&A. But yes, like Ben mentioned, I think he doesn't have an official breakout room for some reason, but you're more than welcome to take over the breakout room. Oh. There's a lot of stuff that's not happening there at any given time. So we'll start with one from the stream, and then we'll head on to the room.
Okay. So one from the stream is, what's the minimum pension age for Nenkin?
Okay. So you can take Nenkin early from age 60. Standard age is 65, and you can delay it until 75. If you take it early, you get, I think, how much? Like 42% less forever. This is generally a very bad idea. If you take it late, you can get up to 84% more forever. And the way I think about this is that If you if you're able to delay taking Nanking to get a larger amount, it's kind of long life insurance. You're kind of insuring yourself against living for a very long time. That bigger pension is going to make things easier. Once you get old, you don't want to be messing around with Rakuten Securities login, right? It's much easier just to get a regular payment into your bank account, right? So my general advice is defer Nanking as much as possible, but you can get it from 60 if you really want to.
Can I ask a question on the exact mechanism that the government uses to determine your actual entry and exit for tax purposes? So just like, for example, I came back in 2023 and I don't want to be, I have PR, but I don't want to be a permanent tax resident. I put my Joomin.io in the summer of 23. My question is, do I need to leave by the end of 2027, or can I leave on like summer 28? And what's the exact process?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I believe it kicks in the start of the tax year, so you might have to leave in December, which would also save you on local inhabitants tax. But yeah, just I would check, maybe talk to a professional or the tax office. Yeah.
Hi, thank you very much. I am a resident in Japan for 10 years and I am doing the NISA and recently changed my job. They're not doing the pension. Anyways, I had to open an iDeCo account for that.
Yeah.
Because I could not touch that money. My question is, of course, I would like to apply for PR, but in the case I was just on a working visa, I cannot touch that money until I'm 60. Not planning to stay so much in Japan. What happens to that money if I'm not a resident?
Yeah, so iDeCo, in some circumstances, if you're not Japanese, you can take the money out early.
More than that amount.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a certain amount, there's a time. If you're over that, it just stays there until you're 60. So, however, once you reach 60, from abroad, you can get your broker or bank to send you the money to your overseas bank account.
I was told they're not doing overseas transfers.
Really?
Yeah.
Who do you?
The securities that was holding the money.
Okay. Because yeah. The ones I've talked to said they would do that. So it might depend on the...
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got one more from the stream. What if I'm over 65 years old? Do I need to pay into a health system? What if I already have Medicare through auto deduction in the USA?
Yeah, I believe, yeah, you would have to pay into the Japanese health system. Not the pension, obviously, because that's only compulsory until 60, but health insurance, yes, national health insurance.
Okay, one last question for the room. Sorry, but again, Ben is going to be with us for the Q&A session at the end of the day as well, so we can keep badgering him then.
Oh, quick question. You mentioned that when you switch tax offices, it's easier to get audited. What does that mean? Does that mean when you move, like to see if we move from Tokyo to Sendai, and then is that easy to get
audited? Yes, so...
Or is that because if we move from one ward to another ward, you still get audited? What does that mean?
So it's anecdotal. It's just my experience and what I've heard, but it's moving tax office. So the tax office generally will cover a certain area. So my wife moved within the city, but to a different tax office catchment area, and the new tax office audited her. So, and this isn't for individuals, this is for sole proprietors, right? Kojin Jigyonushi, who get a bit more scrutiny. So I think that was it. So it's moving tax offices. So for her, she moved from the south tax office to the east tax office. And the new one audited her.
Just one clarification here on the crypto.
Yeah.
Just a clarification on the crypto tax. As of April 10th this year, there's a new legislation that is now 20% flat.
When does that start, though?
It starts by next month. April 10th, the bill has been passed already.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to do tokenization of your building and things to raise money, it's a better way to do it. Just think about it, and then you're able to raise money and you pay only 20% tax flat.
Nice.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben. And he's given me a hope.